Before we start, we just want to say that this episode includes discussion of issues that some listeners may find distressing or triggering. It includes description of suicide and self-harm, as well as references to trauma, addiction, and poor mental health. If you've been affected by these issues, please take care when listening to this episode, and details of support will be shared in the show notes. Now, onto this episode of Locked Out. Welcome to Locked Out, a podcast from Commonweal Housing on the barriers to safe and secure housing for people facing social injustice. I'm Connie Muttock.
And I'm Megan Faraday.
And together with the authors of our new essay anthology, Locked Out, and other guests, we'll be exploring the social injustices in housing policy and practice in the UK, and how to build better housing solutions for those who need them most.
We've never had a home, we've never had stability, and we've never had security. The least the government could do is set us up with a safe house.
As a disabled person, you either have to take what they're offering you or you leave with nothing.
Transitions, such as those between services, localities, and life stages, can cause significant disruption in some people's lives and can increase their risk of housing insecurity and homelessness. This episode is the first of two parts, focusing on the housing challenges that arise for people experiencing periods of transition. In part one, we're talking about housing for young people leaving care. Too many care-experienced people continue to find their most basic needs unmet by both the housing and care systems as they make the difficult transition to independence. Research has shown that as many as 26% of care leavers have sofa surfed and 14% have slept rough, with many others living in unsuitable or inappropriate accommodation. This episode, we are asking, why are so many young care leavers facing housing insecurity and homelessness? And what needs to change to ensure they get the housing and support they need to make a stable transition into independence?
This episode, we're talking to Catherine Sachs-Jones, Chief Executive of Become, the charity for children in care and young care leavers, and Henrietta Imore, a care consultant at EY Foundation, who has a lifetime of campaigning to tackle the overrepresentation of looked after children in the criminal justice system. Later on in the episode, we'll also be speaking to Ikra Saeed, a care experienced individual working with TACT. She talks about her experiences of foster care and the particular housing barriers faced by care leavers who have a disability. So stay tuned for that conversation. But first, here's what we spoke about with Catherine and Henry.
Hello.
Hello.
Catherine, could you start by telling us a bit about the experiences of children in care and what the transition from the care system can be like for these young people?
At Become, probably one of the issues that we get contacted about the most is young people kind of approaching leaving care or who have fairly recently left care. It is a very varied experience for different people, but what we hear is that for many young people, they're kind of dreading their 18th birthday approaching because they know that they're going to have to become so-called independent overnight, essentially, which of course we don't expect of any other young people. You know, most parents expect their kids will hang around for a while, maybe move out, come back. The kind of very abrupt nature of having to go from care to becoming independent. For a third of care leavers, that's on their 18th birthday. So a third of young people leaving care actually do so on their 18th birthdays, you know, a time when lots of young people are celebrating, having fun with their friends. You know, for care leavers, they're worrying about how am I going to live on my own? You know, how am I going to kind of make my way? So the transition is abrupt. And although some young people have a good experience, you know, many find that they're not properly supported in that journey, that they are expected to be able to all of a sudden manage a tenancy on their own, to know how to pay bills, to kind of understand everything you need to know about living independently with what's often quite limited support. A lot of young people will go straight into independent housing, whether that's social housing or private rented housing. And some young people might go into some form of supported accommodation for a couple of years before moving it on to so-called independence. And some will go into kind of much more emergency temporary accommodation like bread and breakfasts and hostels and so on, which for young people can be, you know, can be a really risky environment to go into. So we'll hear from young people who've kind of been moved into a hostel with much older people, perhaps where there are issues with drugs or alcohol, who don't feel safe. you know, something we certainly feel is that there needs to be much more support. It needs to be a much more gradual transition. There needs to be recognition that young people don't suddenly magically become independent. And I say so-called independent because, you know, young people need that ongoing support and care, often for a long time into early adulthood. But unfortunately, a lot of care leavers don't have that and don't have that opportunity to make that slow transition. It's a very difficult situation, and I think it's far from satisfactory, and quite frankly, you know, we should be doing far better for young people leaving care.
Yeah, absolutely. What is the trajectory and the kind of impacts that are had on those young care leavers who are, as you say, ending up in bed and breakfast or other kinds of emergency accommodation, or even sofa surfing or sleeping rough?
I think when something like that happens to you at such a young age, it can have a really, really lasting impact. And if we don't kind of give people that support to kind of be able to navigate independent living at that early stage, then it can lead to them facing problems for a long time into adulthood. And sadly, you know, we do see too many people who've been in care go on to end up facing homelessness and be sofa surfing and even rough sleeping. It's, you know, it's a real disproportionate representation of people who've been in care who then go on to face those kind of problems. And I think a lot of that could be eased if we looked more at this transition and if we made sure that young people were properly supported for as long as they need that support.
Yeah, that's so important. And I think we've kind of spoken before about how these housing challenges aren't just like we're talking here about when you're leaving care, but they can start earlier. There's reports we've seen in the news of children aged 16 and 17 that are staying in unsuitable, unregulated accommodation. Can you tell us a bit about that and why that is happening?
So there's been quite a lot of focus recently on particularly older teenagers, kind of 16, 17, 18, being placed by local authorities in homes that are essentially completely unregulated, that are not being regulated by Ofsted, that are extremely variable in quality. But there are some good providers in that space, but there are also some really bad ones. And, you know, some of that accommodation is frankly unsafe. And not where we should be putting young people, and can increase their risk. So, you know, there are examples of those kind of unregulated homes being targeted by gangs to criminally or sexually exploit the young people in those accommodations. Not enough thought being put into the different types of young people being put together in accommodation, and also examples of other types of accommodation being used. So sometimes even things like caravans, for example, young people being put up in caravans or travel lodges, or, you know, these are not homes for people, and we should not be putting young people into these places and pretending that they are homes. And unfortunately, because there is real pressure on the care system at the moment, what we're seeing is more young people being put into these types of accommodation because local authorities are struggling to find more appropriate homes for them. So it's a really worrying situation. The government is consulting on this issue at the moment, and what they've been proposing is that no under 16 year olds should go into these types of accommodation to start with, which is of course welcome. They're fairly low numbers of under 16 year olds going in at the moment, but there are still some, so it's very welcome that's being stopped. But they're then proposing that some national standards are brought in for unregulated accommodation, so that there will be, you know, some kind of way of monitoring and overseeing the types of accommodation, but it won't be as strict as the kind of regulations needed for care placements. I think it's a step in the right direction, but what we're quite worried about is that you effectively end up creating a two-tier system where 16, 17, 18-year-olds can be put in lower standards of accommodation with less regulation around them, not in care, essentially, even though they are still children. I don't think that's the government's intention, but there's a risk that with the pressures on the care system, local authorities will just start thinking more and more, okay, you're 16 now, you go into unregulated accommodation, and that just becomes the default. I think that's really concerning because we're essentially pushing young people towards more independence at an even younger age, potentially. And I just don't think that kind of accommodation is right for a lot of young people. And so we think that all young people up to the age of 18, and indeed beyond for some, should be in care and should receive the kind of proper support that they need.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in terms of, we've been speaking a lot on this podcast about how the kind of housing challenges like the ones that you've outlined and the social injustices that we're talking about have all been kind of exacerbated as a result of the coronavirus crisis. Has this changed? Has the crisis changed the way that this transition is experienced for young people? What's your understanding of that?
Yeah, so there's a few things. We've seen a big increase in young people coming to us for help, actually, since the beginning of the pandemic. We've seen a 75% increase in young people contacting our care advice helpline. And their young people are really struggling with isolation, mental health problems, as well as hardship and sometimes homelessness. One thing that was welcome was that the education secretary said no young person should have to leave care during the pandemic. But we have heard from young people who maybe moved a bit, just at the start of the crisis, who were then left in housing, which was completely unfurnished, in flats with no bed, with no carpet, with no curtains, and kind of left to fend for themselves. So there's that issue. It's a positive that the education secretary has said no young person should have to leave care at the moment. We're really anxious to see what happens next. Is that going to end overnight? We think it should be continuing, actually. Too many young people face a really abrupt care cliff where all of a sudden they don't have that support and they have to leave care, you know, based just on an arbitrary age, nothing to do with if they personally are ready. So we think it's a welcome step, and looking to the future, we want to see the government build on that and really think about how we can support each individual young person with a proper plan and proper time to leave care when they're ready and to continue to get the support that they need to make a successful transition into independent living.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for that, Catherine. Coming to you, Henry, we're really grateful to have you on this episode today as you come to tell us about your lived experience of going in and out of the care system. Could you tell us a bit about what your experience of leaving care was like and what kind of housing you navigated as part of that period of transition?
Yeah, so I can definitely tell you that. And the examples I'm going to give are going to be really parallel to what Catherine just said. Actually, I want to just, before I tell you my experience, I want to just tell you an experience of a young person that I find really shocking, and most people don't know about her story. So she was put into a bus garage for her emergency accommodation. And this bus garage was at the back of Hounslow, and really, really bad, and run down. And it was only until she built the courage to tell her social worker that she didn't feel safe because there was quite a lot of drug addicts around there. That's when she got moved. So in terms of the severity of what Catherine is saying, it's quite bad. And I think it's quite embarrassing, personally, in terms of the state. And in terms of taxpayers' money, that this is where vulnerable young people are sleeping. Because you wouldn't put your child in no place like that, in a bus garage place. You wouldn't. I didn't even know they even have rooms available for that. But I can definitely talk to you about my experience. So I was put into 6 foster homes when I was younger. And in that transition, I lived with every nationality you could think of, with different religions. And that also culturally was quite difficult. I'm a Christian child who was brought up in a Christian household. But my foster parents had a hard time with me, running away consistently. And then it got to the point where my social worker was like, right, okay, cool, Henry, we need to get you in some sort of arts. So that kept me on the go in performing arts. And that's something that was my outlet. And then, as Catherine rightly said, the key transitions of care leavers are the worst. So I actually call them cliffhangers. So after the 6 foster homes that I moved into, I then went on to what Catherine said, a semi-independence. And I stayed there for about 4 years. It wasn't meant to be 4 years that I stayed there. But sadly, that's how long they kept me there. And that brought a lot of issues. I was at university and I had no Wi-Fi. I was at Lewisham College, no Wi-Fi, no access to laptop. I would often have to be at friends, just trying to barely do my coursework. There would be fights in that hostel. There would be visitors that came into the hostel and sold drugs. I was the only one doing FE College and went on to university in that hostel. Everybody else was high risk. So I'm not sure why they put a low risk with a high risk. So I found it really, really difficult. And then I got into quite a lot of arrears, service charge arrears. And then, as Catherine rightly said, 18th birthday came and I got this beautiful flat that you can see now. When I moved here, I had no clue what I was about to embark on and how heavy it was going to be. So like when Catherine's talking about the bills and like, it sounds like it's small, but to a care experience person, it's huge. It feels like you are sinking in debt. It feels like you're drowning and you can't breathe. That's how it feels like. Nobody told me or equipped me how to pay bills. Nobody told me about council tax. So I had a lot of arrears. Nobody told me about water bill, gas, electric, TV license, food, utilities, a budget sheet that you could have, lots of things. Nobody told me about these issues. So I was just going along. And as soon as that support was withdrawn, I felt like the world had crumbled. Also, when you are reliant on the state, it's cushioned. You have so much financial support. And as soon as that is gone and you have no support network, you can really relapse and go into like mental health institutions. And I understand why 40% of kids in care end up in the criminal justice system. Because if you think about it, we're not equipped for these semi-independences. We're not equipped to live alone. We have instabilities from the start of when you're taken into care and it stays with you all the way to the end. I'm out of the care system and I've got a fantastic job and I've got a fantastic wage and I'm really happy and I'm an advocate. However, I often get worried about if I lose my job, I lose my flat. And if I lose my flat, I lose my mind. And if I lose my mind, everything from there will crumble. And I think social housing and housing for care leavers is one of the biggest thing, the biggest impact on our mental health, because we've never had a home. We've never had stability and we've never had security. So the least the government could do is set us up with a safe house. Another thing to mention as well is that social services should be offering and paying for therapy for every young person. I'm only now in my career able to afford therapy. That is bad. Like, I'm 26 and I went into care at the age of 10. That's a lot of trauma I'm carrying. That's a lot of trauma that I've had to carry to every job, every interview, every educational institution. Every time I wake up, I'm carrying that trauma. And only now I'm able to afford that therapy. I need to sit on some government boards because the boards, I just feel like I'm not doing enough. I would protest on that every day.
Which leads us on very well to the next question, Henry, which is what needs to change if you were on those government boards? What would you be saying to them? What would have made a difference to you?
Do you know what, Connie? I can't condense that. I can't condense it into points. It's huge. I could be here forever. But what I will do is I could try and condense it like into a few. One is it's funny that we call it the care system, yet there's no care. Young people need to be seen. We need to be seen before our caseloads. So what I mean by that is workers need to not see us as a caseload. We're human beings. We're people's children. Okay. And I think that's what I want the government to really think. Where's the humanity in this? The second thing we need to focus on is foster care transitions. It's absolutely embarrassing. I've got a brother that's in the care system right now. He's not coming out till he's, 25, 26? So I'm out of the care system doing fine, but I'm constantly having to relive my trauma by hearing my younger brother, who's 15, be moved every single month. My younger brother has been moved 9 times this year. I counted it, I put it on the chart, and I speak about it in every public talk that I do. 9 times. That is a joke. And that boy has to carry his clothes in a bin bag and carry that in the cab and be moved 9 times. And he left school with 9 GCSEs this year. And I cried my eyes out. So I'm using my brother as an example, but that's one person. And so many care leavers at the moment are in school studying right now from their homes and they're being moved. We need to stop these breakdowns of foster care placements. There needs to be a rule that if they're going to foster a child, it has to be long term. And if it's not working, what's the next step? Children just can't be moved like a box. The third one I would say is there needs to be some mental health training for every person who comes into the contact with care leavers. Trauma-informed training, it needs to just be put on the agenda. As long as you're in contact with a care leaver, you need to be informed about the trauma. I will never forget the day that my mum tried to jump off the River Thames and tried to kill herself. I will never forget the day where she drank bleach and she tried to do all of these things just to get away. And I will never forget the day when my brother was like looking for milk and he was crawling on the floor. These are trauma that I can speak about like it happened yesterday. This happened years ago. So it's like, we need to really think about what are we, for professionals, what training are we providing? And it can't just be 1 week, two hours. It needs to be a long, intense, embedded training. And that training needs to be led by care leavers, lived experience. Another third thing I would say as well, how do we upscale, give young people agency, just like the social entrepreneurship program that I went on to? How do we give young people agency to be the leaders in this space? Because at the moment, it's very prescriptive. There's so many care leavers that I've seen, but there's no leadership boards for them. There's no networks for them. I'm tired of the prescriptive. I'm tired of people telling us what to do. It's about how do we empower young people to navigate these systems and have these conversations. There's care leavers that don't talk like me, but they've got fantastic ideas. And it's about how we empowering those young people. How can we start to, rather than disenfranchising them, how can we start to equip them to be the leaders? And that's what I want to see. The Greta Thunbergs for climate change, how do we start to create that shift for care leavers? It should be happening inside the government. We should be having policy change where we're working with Catherine to really, you know, create events, but also going back and making some policy change.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Definitely, I think that's a really good challenge. We need to find ways to kind of get care leavers leading a lot of the change that needs to happen. The government has promised a complete review of the care system, and that's due to be announced probably in the coming months. And we're really pushing that care experience people need to absolutely be at the heart of that. And so we really hope that the government's going to listen and make sure that care experienced people's voices are heard at like every level of that review and are completely center in deciding, you know, what changes need to happen. Because of course, you know, they're the people who know best what needs to change. And unfortunately, too often, voices are not listened to. There's a real issue with aspirations and expectations for young people in care. Often professionals in young people's lives don't have the kind of aspirations for young people that we should have, and like it can be quite limiting, and there's a lot of stigma, and that's what we hear from young people all the time. And it was interesting to hear you say, Henry, about your one social worker who kind of directed you towards the creative arts and like the difference that's made. I don't think that happens enough. I think that's
I loved my social worker. Like till today, I like still talk to her. She was great. And most care leavers don't have that.
I think it's so important that you talk about imagination and aspiration for care leavers, and a safe and stable home is really quite essential to any care leaver being able to imagine a bright future for themselves and to create a path towards aspirations. So I'm just curious to ask you both about where you see housing-based solutions fitting into what you see needing to change within the care system.
We should definitely be making sure that we're regulating those homes. I think there should be a separate independent visitor who checks and makes sure that these are safe homes for young people before they even place a child there. And yeah, just the lack of stability, the cliffhangers and the transitions need to be a lot smoother. And then the homes need to be safe. If they're going to be in semi-independence, prep them and equip them for semi-independence. Don't just dump them in there. If we can equip and support care leavers at the start, we would save the government money in terms of homelessness and also in terms of the criminal justice system. Care leavers are often criminalised from the start of foster care. I know care leavers have been arrested in foster homes. So I think there's a lot here to do with housing, and I think it really should be thought, carefully thought about, and really regulated. there needs to definitely be some work on the transitions, and somebody needs to be checking these houses to make sure they're safe.
Yeah, exactly.
Definitely agree with that. I think the transitions is key. Like, there has to be proper support. It has to be done at a time that young people are ready. They have to get that right to start with. But there also has to be room for things to go wrong for young people. Like, you know, when you're young, you make mistakes, things are difficult, especially if you haven't had that support and guidance, if you don't know about like all the bills that Henry was talking about and how the whole thing works. And unfortunately, a lot of care leavers find that if things go wrong, there's nowhere for them to go. There's no safety net, you know, they're intentionally homeless, and there has to be room for young people to make mistakes and for the state to say, okay, we'll still be here and we're still going to help you and we're going to guarantee that you get safe housing. And the other thing, just to finish, is, you know, young people leaving care are only in priority need for housing up to 21. That's not old enough, it should be up to 25. There's a recognition that young people should get a personal advisor up to 25, and lots of other support goes up to 25. So it doesn't make any sense that other things stop at different ages, including priority need. So that needs to go up. But, you know, the care experience doesn't finish at a defined age, so it needs to be a lot more personalized and really supporting young people.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's impossible to listen to you both speak today and not be really impacted actually by the amount of issues that there are in the system and the wide scope that there is for improvement as things currently stand. I'm just very grateful to you both today for really sharing your insight on all of that. It's been such a valuable conversation. In this podcast, we're asking all of our guests to highlight just one example of an innovative housing solution to social injustice that you're currently aware of. So whether that's something that's in social care services or something that's purely housing based.
Yeah, I think it's called Lighthouse. It's from Catch 22. They've just launched a massive residential home, which is super holistic. There's quite a lot of bespoke support around mental health. And I think the way it's created is like very, very colourful and soothing, and everything is really thinking about like their development and any emotional triggers that has happened. I know that something like that would be amazing for care leavers to go in. And I can see that it's carefully been thought about before a young person in care is in that residential home. Another thing to mention as well is, I know of an organisation called Yoga Retreats that support care leavers, and they go on to like a sort of a yoga retreat for like 2-3 weeks, and they discuss like all the emotional trauma, but also like the aspirations that young people might have in their lives. Both are led by care experience people, actually. I think they're both led by care experience professionals.
That sounds absolutely brilliant. Thank you for sharing that. Catherine, same question to you.
So one model that is actually run by one of our trustees, Terry Galloway, and he was in care himself as a child and was moved over 100 times. He's now a successful businessman in Nottingham and runs a property business and also a housing association, works particularly with care leavers to find them accommodation. A new model that he's trying, which sounds really interesting, is providing supported accommodation for care leavers where they can kind of, you know, get the support that they need, learn skills of living in a tenancy. And then when they're ready to move into, you know, more independent living, rather than having to move out of the flat that they're in, they can stay in that property, but at a lower rent, because supported accommodation tends to be really expensive. So it gives them that kind of stability of knowing that they can stay in that same property, have that more intensive support to start with, and then it can kind of allow them to ease more gradually into to kind of managing things more independently. But, you know, I think there are lots of schemes across the country happening like that that are really promising. But the problem is, it is a really varied picture. We know the kinds of things that work, but there's not the investment or really the will there to kind of make them available to all young people leaving care. So they're few and far between young people who get into these schemes. And I think we need to take those promising practices and make sure all young people who benefit can access those kind of models.
Well, that's a really strong note to end on. I just want to say thank you both so much. I feel fired up by some of the stuff that you've been saying, and it's really great that there is a review going on so that like our listeners can hear this and can feed into that consultation, because I think there are huge amounts of social injustice in this area that really need to be addressed. Before we close, it's just kind of a chance for both of yourselves to draw our listeners' attention to any kind of contact details that you want to share, any campaigns you want to highlight, any kind of research reports, or whatever it is that you want our listeners to be aware of before you go.
We are going to be campaigning around the care cliff and that drop in sport because it's just such a huge issue. It's something that we have started to raise already, and that's going to be a real focus for us going forward. We provide direct support to young people leaving care, and also we have a helpline which both young people themselves and professionals can access, and we provide one-to-one coaching support to young people as well as group work. So there's lots of information on our websites about all that direct support, and we also do training consultancy for professionals to help improve their practice and to help understand young people's experiences, and we involve young people in that work. So have a look on our website, becomecharity.org.uk. There's lots of information there about the care system and about the support that we provide.
So I work for EY Foundation, and we're currently launching a brand new employability program for young people in care aged 16 to 17. So we are launching it this year, but we're also looking for other local partners and organisations and local authorities that would like to partner with us for the following year. So we're upscaling it nationally. It's a really bespoke program that I consulted on, and it's amazing now that we've designed it, and it's more than an employability program. So really looking at what are the skills that an employer needs as well as the young person. So we've got like training for mentors and also training for employers to make sure we bridge that gap, to make sure that they successfully transition into employment. So definitely follow EY Foundation and contact me as well if you ever wanted to hear a bit more about that as well. I'm also part of the BME Care Leavers Network at the GLA. So we also do like lots of different things and campaigns that happen around Christmas time. So look out for that. I also do some work within like the art space. So I set up my own theatre company called Redefine, and we're like constantly looking for support or local authorities that ever needed like me to come and lead a workshop, or ever needed me to like come in and be an ambassador for their local authorities and speak to their young people or deliver anything that is inspiring. As well as working at EY Foundation, I am also an ambassador and an advocate for care experience young people. So people can definitely contact me in my spare time to like come and speak to your young people at any time. Christmas is also a really hard time for care leavers. So really do look at other charities that you can support other care leavers, like Become. Really do support charities like that around Christmas time, because there's high suicide rates that go up. So please contact the Tope Project. They're amazing. The Tope Project do a lot of work for care leavers. They rely heavily on donations. I'm screaming a lot of organizations that would love this at the moment. but please do contact and help.
Great, thank you, Henry. And we will put links to all of the organizations that Henry has mentioned and that Catherine has mentioned in the episode notes, so you can find all the details there. Later on in the episode, Megan and I got the chance to speak to Ikra Saeed, who sits on the East Midlands Fostering Panel for TACT, the Adolescent and Children's Trust, and is an advisor on their new alumni scheme for care experienced individuals. Ikra spoke to us about her experiences in care and highlighted key figures on the care system, which were kind of compiled by her colleague at TACT, Ashley Andrews. Here's our conversation.
So for me, once I turned 18, well, even prior to turning 18, me and my foster carer had discussed what was kind of going to be my path and where I was going to go. I'd sort of started looking at universities and where I was going to go and what I was going to study. So I think that kind of went hand in hand with where I was going to be living. And at first, I had this like idea of moving far away to another area, going to university there and living in student halls. And then I think what happened was is that I kind of realized I didn't want to do that, and it was really scary and daunting. But I was too scared to tell my foster carer Natalie, because she'd been so excited about it and was kept like telling everybody how I was going to be moving away for uni, and we'd looked at this university and that university, and I thought, god, like, she's probably making plans for my room already for something like to allocate it to someone else. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't, I think, realise as well. No matter how close or comfortable you are with your foster carer, it's always a little bit of an awkward topic, you know, because you're basically saying, are you going to throw me out or can I stay here, sort of thing. And I ended up talking to her about it, and she was like, if you don't want to go away to university, don't go. Like, it's absolutely fine. You can stay here, which I'm really grateful for. Then we had to sort of look into the staying put arrangement. Yeah, that was quite a stressful time.
Yeah, I can imagine. And what can you tell us a bit about what the staying put arrangement is? And was it different for you in terms of what your peers might have experienced at that time?
So the staying put arrangement is basically, it's an arrangement where you can live with your foster carer post 18. It works differently for different local authorities, but the main idea is that you live there as almost like a lodger. The dynamics can change. I think it is a good thing, but there is a lot of improvements that need to be made to it. For some foster carers, it's not financially viable. I think with fostering, I think people automatically assume that, you know, these foster carers, these are, you know, the angels of the universe who, you know, they're doing it out of the kindness of their heart, which, you know, I'm sure there's many foster carers out there who are doing it because they love fostering, you know. But at the same time, I think we need to respect them as professionals. But also, I think I was reading an article, I think last week, about a young woman who didn't have the option of staying on the staying put policy because her and her foster carer had such a bad relationship and her foster carer just didn't really want her there post 18. Which is terrible. I don't understand. I don't think being a foster carer stops once that young person has turned 18. And I think that goes back to kind of when, you know, foster carers are assessed. And I think that needs to be looked at. There needs to be a focus around how will they manage a young person turning 18? You know, how will they do? Would they consider, you know, doing the staying put policy? Would they, you know, what do they think about it? It is a good thing. For me, it's been positive, but I do know that for many people, it hasn't.
And when we spoke last, you were telling me a bit about the kind of housing options that are available for other young people like you that have accessibility requirements. From what you've said, it's even harder to find somewhere to stay if you, for example, use a wheelchair or you've got other requirements around accessibility.
Basically, if I do want to access council housing, it's not as kind of straightforward for me because any property that I move into, even if it is, you know, adapted, it's likely that those adaptations won't be perfect for me and it will still have to be adapted to me. And that takes time because it's not just the actual construction side of thing, it's, you know, with anything it comes down to the money side of it, you know, the bureaucracy behind it and, you know, how it's going to be funded and what grant will I need, and it's quite tiresome to think about it. And that's with council housing. Private housing is even worse. There's not enough private housing that is adaptable or wheelchair accessible. Let's just say, for argument's sake, tomorrow I woke up and I decided that I want to access council housing, and I rang up my PA, and from what he has told me, it could take me up to 6 months longer than it would anybody else, just because of the amount of work it would take to find property and to make it work for me. It's really scary because the council obviously have, you know, limited budgets, and the adaptations that they can offer you are often very basic. It can feel like, as a disabled person, you either have to take what they're offering you or you leave with nothing. It shouldn't be that way. I feel like in society now we're kind of still stuck in the same place, I think, when it comes to attitudes to disability. I would like to see more clarity around what happens if you have a disability, because I feel like if you have a disability and new policies and guidelines are put out there, you have to go and do that extra bit of homework and you have to find out, like, what does this mean for me? Because I have a disability, what does this mean for me? I didn't even know that I had access to support until the age of 25 because of my disability. I was under the assumption it was 21, and I didn't find that out too long ago myself. And that's quite a big thing. That's an extra 4 years of support. Why is this not emphasised to young people? It just feels like we're asking for things that we're entitled to. It's that whole thing of, like, you know, you need to take advantage of the system, when really you're not taking advantage at all. This is literally the bare minimum of what you're entitled to. And you shouldn't feel guilty for asking for it. They should actually be making you aware of what you have access to.
Yeah, exactly. I suppose it kind of defeats the object if it's something that you have to go and look for yourself rather than something that's offered to you. Like, it's a service. At the end of the day, it should be served to you, I suppose. Accessibility at the point of finding information out absolutely needs to be the first step, because otherwise how are you going to know that it's there, right?
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes it feels like your own social worker or your own PA. And going back to one of the previous questions about what it was like for me turning 18, when I had turned 18, I didn't have a PA for about 6 months. And what's meant to happen is you're meant to be introduced to your PA prior to turning 18. And there wasn't enough PAs, basically, for me to be allocated one. And me and my foster carer had to do a lot of homework and we had to figure out what we were doing and, you know, all those things like, you know, claiming benefits and stuff like that. My foster carer and me had to do it on my 18th birthday, when really it should have been my PA doing all that sort of stuff with me. So yeah, it was quite a stressful time.
You've been speaking about your experience of being supported as you've navigated a transition into university as well, but I wonder if you can speak at all about the kind of support that is out there for people leaving the care system and navigating postgrad education. What does that look like for young people?
Well, from my experience, there is nothing out there from my local authority and many local authorities. I think that because of the statistic, I think it's increased now a little bit, but it was, you know, for a long time, it was known as, you know, only 6% of care leavers gone to university and they're twice as likely to drop out than those who haven't been in care. And I think because of that, there was a massive focus around undergraduate study and really pushing young people who are care experienced towards that route. And, you know, because of that, there was like the bursary universities as well, providing support on their behalf to care leavers. And that is great and that is amazing. And it has helped me and so many other people. But I think it's like turning 18. You feel like you're given all this support and then that's it. You've done, you graduate, you finish your degree, and you feel like you're back at square one. It feels like this is a very big leap in life you've taken, but it almost feels like you've taken a step back as well, because like when you turn 18, all the support is again cut off. Like, you know, oh, you've got your degree now, you've done it undergraduate, that's it, you don't need us anymore. And when I have spoken to my local authority and tried to kind of access support for postgraduate study, because that is something I really want to do, I've been told that there's no support, no financial support, there's nothing that they can really do. Again, it's very unclear if, as a care leaver, as someone who's care experienced, I can claim benefits and seek financial help from Student Finance England. Again, I had to go and do my homework, and to be completely honest, I still don't know the answer. So I feel like that really needs some work. We're working towards making statistics look better, but we're not actually working towards making the lives of care leavers a life of quality, really. I think it will be eventually looked at, but I think it shouldn't have been an afterthought. It should have been looked at when the undergraduate side of things is looked at as well. Also, I think that there is a major inconsistency between the support that different local authorities provide to their care experienced young people who go on to university for undergraduate study. So, for example, I knew somebody who was given like a whole package of, so her accommodation was paid for. She got, I think, a bursary or a grant every week to help towards sort of food costs and books and things, you know, travel and stuff like that. And that was amazing. So then I had these high hopes of what sort of help I'd be getting. The first year at uni, I got a grant from my local authority to sort of help financially, and that was it. It would have been nice to have somebody sort of check in on me, see if I was okay, and because it's not just about the money. We don't want to just be handed money and then left to it. We want, you know, it's about somebody saying like, oh, okay, how was uni this week, and you know, is there any textbooks you need? And I feel like there is more of a conversation and, you know, a genuine interest that needs to take place behind it as well. Also, there was a young person who was from Cambridge, and I think it was about £200 a week, again, for like travel and expenses and food. I wasn't being offered anything like that. When I did try and kind of challenge my local authority and say, you know, like I need, because I genuinely did need help with travel, because I was driving to university and petrol is not cheap by any means. I think if I hadn't have taken it on the chin and decided to just go on with it, I think I would have probably stopped doing that. I would have fell behind on work and I probably would have dropped out. So that's like, it can make such a big difference. The inconsistency is crazy. I think I did my own research the other day, and the Royal Borough of Kensington and Chelsea, they give their care leavers a bursary of £6,000, whereas other local authorities it's £2,000, and I'm sure there's some which don't provide a bursary, or you know, the bursary is even lower than that. So there is massive inconsistencies across the UK. It's almost like a postcode lottery. Depends where you live, you know, tell us where you live and we'll tell us what you're entitled to.
Yeah, it sounds it for sure. Thinking about those cracks in the system that you've identified, I wonder if you're aware of any particularly standout services that are kind of filling those cracks and helping to make things better for young people navigating out of the care system.
What would be really helpful for young people who are sort of trying to work their way out of the system is like a former looked after sort of scheme. A bit like what TACT has already launched. So they have TACT Connect, which is like an alumni scheme for their formerly looked after children. It's like a community really, where you talk and, you know, you can meet other young people with similar experiences. And it's about being able to not just share good times with people who understand what that really means for you, but it's also when things aren't going so well. And I think in the grand scheme of things, if it was facilitated on a large scale, the difference it could make would be massive.
Yeah, that sounds great, and I think that's a lovely note to end on actually. Thank you so much, Iqra, for sharing your experiences with us and your ideas and your thoughts and your hopes for the future. It's been really great to have you on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Locked Out, produced by Connie Muttock and Megan Faraday from Commonweal Housing. Do make sure to follow the show by subscribing wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find all our episodes, as well as the new Locked Out essay anthology for free download, at commonwealhousing.org.uk/lockedout. If you'd like to find out more about any of the issues we discussed in this episode, or in the Locked Out anthology, do get in touch with us by email at info@commonweal.org.uk. You can also tweet us your thoughts with the hashtag LockedOut and follow all our latest updates on Twitter at CommonwealTweet, one word. From all of us at Commonweal, thank you for listening.